Welcome to the Pathfinder Podcast, brought to you by Shillington, where we talk to creators about how they navigated their design careers from the early beginnings up until now, and the twists and turns along the way. I'm Jimmy Muldoon, designer and teacher at Shillington's New York campus. Glad you could join us.
Today we have Gabby, who is a design director at Smack Studio based in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. She specializes in branding, web design, and photo direction. Gabby, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, how's your day going so far? It's a big day in American history.
I know, it's kind of crazy. We have like a morning like catch up most days, and we were all talking. We're like all agreed that for the inauguration, like we're just not going to work and just like pay attention to the news, like. Because we're like, we could try and pretend we're working, or we can just all agree that we're just not going to pay attention. So yeah, it's like the vibes are good in Brooklyn today.
Yeah.
Like people seem to be like in good moods. Mm-hmm. Like I'm in a good mood. I also found out, unrelated to the inauguration, but I found out my mom gets the first dose of the vaccine today.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that because my parents are older than 65. So, good mood today.
That's great. You know, it's interesting times, you know, in America, but it's you know, with obviously the vaccines that are kind of coming out, and you know, the kind of time that we're living in is we're living through history at the moment.
I'm so tired of living through history.
Yeah.
Through unprecedented times. I want them to be unprecedented times.
Yeah, our Slack channel at work has been like loads of GIFs of just like people popping champagne, kind of like dancing. You know, it is, you know, obviously a very, very important day, you know, for history. So, you know, it's nice to be able to kind of watch it unfold and be living in it as well.
Yeah. And with surprisingly nothing crazy happening.
Yeah.
I think I'll have a little breath of relief.
No, that's great. Obviously, you know, it's the start of the year. We were kind of chatting before about, you know, kind of hitting the ground running. How's it been for the first, you know, kind of couple weeks of 2021 after, you know, the year that we had before?
I think it's been good. Like, I think the last couple of weeks of 2020, I think people were kind of just ready to be done with so many things, obviously. Work included in that, like, we just wanted a button on a couple of projects that were hanging in the air, and it kind of felt like, you know, a lot of things kind of compounded all at the 11th hour. I'm sure a lot of people felt that. So I think we all kind of came in the new year with a little bit more of a positive attitude. And it's something that we chatted about a little bit before we started recording, but, you know, we've added a few new people to, our staff, which for us, since we're such a small studio, you know, we're generally somewhere around roughly 10 people, give or take, depending on where we're at in the year or on projects. Just every time we add a new person, we kind of add a new group of skill sets that have strengths and weaknesses. So we end up adjusting our process a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we've been really into like studio process this first half of the month here, which has been, I think it's been really positive because I think, you know, again, since we're so small, everyone kind of gets to have an opinion about what we can change to help things. So I feel like even though it takes a lot of work to rebuild process or to tweak process, I think people come into it feeling like they, you know, they have something to add to it, not like they're being told something to do, which I think kind of creates a little bit more positivity. And I think we're all like then excited about like where it's gonna go. And we also started a couple new cool projects. So I think, you know, for us, this new year feels really good. And I definitely feel like we've kind of balanced things a little bit more so that it doesn't feel as like crushing. The workload doesn't feel like kind of overwhelming. I feel like, you know, it's definitely a full days, but not so full you can't breathe or thing, which is
great. Yeah, and it's really like, I guess with like new systems being put in place, it kind of refreshes that as well, where it's like, it comes back to that whole idea of like, we've always done it this way, which is a very dangerous thing as a creative, where, you know, it's uncomfortable to move and adjust, but it's sometimes really nice in a new year to kind of reflect and go, did that actually work effectively, and get other people's intake? And I think that's great about a small studio that you are, is that everyone kind of has a voice. Everyone's got the ability to vocalize, hey, this was a bit of a pain point. What if we did this? And that's a really nice thing to be able to have that input at such a, you know, a ground level and kind of see it kind of flow out, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, we started it a couple years ago, like having big process meetings. And I think it's been so successful. And like you said, like, we never want to be like, well, we've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. No one should ever be saying that in the office.
it's a dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And it would be really easy for me to say, since I've been at Smack for so long, but I'm happy to change.
yeah, it is kind of refreshing. So I kind of wanted to open it up to you to kind of like give us a little bit of a background on, you know, where you're from, where you grew up, and, you know, and even kind of reflecting about upbringing and how that may have influenced your career choice for today.
Yeah. So I grew up most of my life in upstate New York, pretty small town called Endicott, which is right next to Binghamton, New York, which, if you know anyone who went to a SUNY school, that might sound familiar, but it's about 3 hours north of New York City.
Okay.
But before that, I was born in California, and then we moved to Arizona and then Colorado. And my dad is from the town in upstate where we ended up moving back to and growing up in. So it was a small town upbringing, but my parents kind of lived everywhere within the U.S. And I feel like I was definitely very lucky. I think I have like a really good relationship with my parents, and I think they have always been really supportive of me, and I feel like they definitely are like really appreciate the arts, and like my dad plays piano and he also builds bikes, and my mom has, you know, until she retired 2 years ago, was a respiratory therapist, but before that she was like a dancer, and like, so like, you know, they have like on paper pretty boring jobs, but I feel like they're very like creative, and even if they're not like in the arts in any way, like they're not necessarily creating you know, pieces of art, but they definitely appreciate it. And I think they've always been supportive of me, even though we really didn't have any money growing up. I loved drawing when I was little. So my parents signed me up for like a comic drawing class when I was in third grade, and everyone else I was in class with was like in high school. And like, thinking about it now, like, I can't believe they paid for that class because we had no money. But I'm like, at the time, didn't even cross my mind. But like, they've just been very open, and they're also like super, you know, left leaning, and like, you know, so like, me saying like, hey, I want to do something in the arts, they weren't like, how are you gonna get a job? Like, they're just like, okay, great, we just can't pay for college, sorry.
yeah
but yeah, I mean, like most people who grew up in a small town, like, was happy to leave it. I would say pretty much how I got here in my life to my parents, which might sound kind of cheesy, but.
do you remember much about kind of the traveling that you did when you were younger, and are there things that you kind of hold on to from, you know, maybe those different kind of, you know, cities?
Yeah. You know, I was born in just outside of LA, and I lived in LA since I was five. So I only have very vague memories of like looking at the ocean and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But by the time we moved to Phoenix, Arizona, I was over the age of 5. So I have like, and we lived there the longest of all the other places, about 3 years. So I have like pretty solid memories of being in Arizona in the early 90s. And I mean, I was obsessed with the desert. I thought it was like the most beautiful thing in the world. So it's definitely something that holds like a, I feel like I have really fond nostalgic memories of that, that kind of climate and aesthetic that I always, you know, I get a little, I reminisce about a little bit. I get a little nostalgic whenever I see things that remind me of it. Also for anyone who knows about basketball, that was when the Phoenix Suns were like at their best in the 90s. So I'm a huge fan of the Phoenix Suns when I was a little kid and knew nothing about anything. But yeah, I think, I don't know if it's anything explicit that I can like point to, but I definitely, I acknowledge that even though I wasn't living in different countries all over the world, moving around as a kid gave me a different perspective from some of the other kids that I ended up with in class who had never gone anywhere outside of their town, especially when I moved to upstate New York. I remember people telling me I had an accent and I was like, I hate to break it to you guys, but you have an upstate accent. Like, but they, you know, it's just like a small example, but I feel like it definitely gave me a little bit of extra perspective that I maybe wouldn't have had if I had just lived in one spot. Certainly didn't make me worldly, but I think, you know, just got me thinking a little tiny bit outside of my own experience, which is always good.
Yeah. Well, this country is so massive. You know, America is so huge that, you know, I haven't done a lot of it, but in what I've seen, like, it feels like sometimes a different country, like, you know, way of, one, what's important, the values, how people live, how people, you know, the accent that people have, and, you know, how they eat. Like, I feel like there's so much variance within this country of, you know, so many different ways of living and thinking. And I think being exposed to that is a great thing as a child, because you kind of get an outward perspective of that, you know, my way isn't necessarily the be all and end all, or the quote unquote right way. There's other ways of living.
Yeah. I also lived for a year and a half in Denver, but in Colorado, but it was so small. I mean, I was older, so I remember more, but I was there for so little time, but that was also beautiful.
Yeah, that's and the Phoenix Suns, you know, back in the 90s, you know, they were the team. Did you have a favorite? Who was your favorite player back then?
God, I think it'll take me a sec to remember who was on what. Charles Barkley. Yeah, he was the best.
He was such an incredible player. I love like watching the basketball now and seeing him interact with people like Shaq, you know, that they used, you know, obviously played around the same time, and the tension that's between them. I really, really enjoy seeing those old school like players.
Yeah,
kind of still.
That was like when Jordan like was peak too, and I have a picture of myself from that time where I handmade a Chicago Bulls shirt. Wow. Like I drew it with marker. I know that. About basketball now, but boy did I love it when I was like 6 years old.
Yeah, it's really interesting, you know, and that's the thing, you know, maybe your parents really did see something at such a young age that were like, we'll pay for that class, that art class, and really encourage you to move forward with it. You know, you're obviously, you know, a budding, you know, artist and creative at such a young age, so you know they saw something.
Yes, I am every day.
So can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to be at SMACSU for, you know, the last eight years?
Yeah. As of this past October, it was 8 years. So I'm fully into my ninth, which is insane to think about. But I feel like my kind of trajectory is definitely going to be odd as I explain it, because I guess I'll just start from the beginning. So I only have an associate's degree. I do not have a bachelor's degree. I went to FIT because it is a community college. So it has community college tuition. So it was the only school I could afford to go to that had like a good design program. And they have a great design program. And they have a lot of teachers who teach at all the other big name private schools. They teach there. So really great that I could do that. But I couldn't afford to stay in school any longer than 2 years. I was taking out student loans for everything because of my workload. I couldn't work enough to pay for my life. So I used student loans to pay for my life, which means at the end of 2 years, I had like $30,000 in student loans from a public school that was only like $3,000 a year, you know, because that's the price of living in New York City.
Yeah.
So I was like, I did the math. I'm like, I don't think I can afford to stay in school and get my bachelor's degree. And I talked to some people I knew who were already out of school, and they're like, you know, a 4-year degree is nice, but when it comes to design, your portfolio is everything. Mm. So, you know, if you feel like you have a good enough portfolio to start looking for work, start doing that, and get that to like, get at least get a degree. And, you know, it's not necessarily the best advice for everyone, but it made sense to me. And actually, before I went to FIT, I had 2 years at another school in upstate New York at SUNY Binghamton. And they were supposed to take my credits and they didn't. So I had to start over fresh at FIT. So I have 4 years of college under my belt with a 2-year degree, which was very frustrating.
Yeah.
So I just like couldn't afford to take on any more debt. So yeah, I got out of college. But I was so kind of like imposter syndrome convinced, because I didn't have a 4-year degree, there was like no way I was going to get a job. I started looking at internships. All of them expected you to get unpaid or stipend for full-time internships. And so I never interned anywhere because I couldn't afford to. The first job I had at a school was working at an art store. And then while I worked at that art store, I started looking for real jobs, because at first it was like, okay, I need to pay my rent, so I got to take this art store job that pays me $9 an hour. Better than the internship, which were going to pay me $30 a week.
Wow.
So I know I got so excited about one of them, and they're like, okay, great, $30 stipend. I'm like, what? Okay, well, I have to pay for my rent. My mom doesn't do that, so bye. Anyway, so then I started looking for work, and I found a job as like a designer / kind of front clerk at a print shop. And it was paying $15 an hour. So I was like, whoo, that's rich people money. So I was very excited. So I took that job. And then eventually, that job was actually great, even though on paper it sounded like a nothing job, because I really learned a lot about print. Mm. Like I learned like a crazy amount about print, which was, it is still very helpful, even though my job isn't really that much in print, but it helps when we're doing packaging. But then from there, they like eventually the people working there learned I knew how to do design. And so they started, it's like a bigger company, that has like little print shops, and then they it's called Village Print. I don't even know if it's around anymore, to be honest. But then they pulled me into like their Midtown office to do some stuff, and then they pulled me to another department, and I kind of just got pulled. I was like pulled in to fill in the gaps everywhere, till they finally pulled me into doing wedding invites, and I was like, I hate this so much. I hated it. It was the most mind-numbing work, because it would really just be a bride would come in. Luckily, I didn't have to talk to the brides, because I don't think I could have mustered the enthusiasm that I needed to. But a bride would come in and would be like, I want this wedding invite, but I can't afford or will not pay for the price, so can you copy it? That was like so much of my work, was just like straight up copying someone else's designs, except it would be worse because it would be on, you know, it wouldn't be embossed or anything. So I ended up getting fired from that job because they could tell I hated it. They could tell I hated it straight up. And like, I should have quit maybe 8 months before I got fired, to be honest, because it was just such mind-numbing work. But luckily, getting fired was actually the best thing that happened to me, as you'll probably hear a lot of people say, because it forced me to try and get a better job. So I ended up working at Smack Next from a Craigslist ad, because at the time Smack was three people. So I was like looking, I didn't know where to look for jobs. I mean, this was 2012. There wasn't as many, like, there wasn't like working, not working, or like stuff like that. It was a lot harder, I felt like, to find design work. So I looked on Craigslist, and they had a position advertised as an internship, but it was paying better than the job I got fired from. Because they did a paid internship. And I was like, well, I know I can do this job because I'm like more experienced than an intern out of school. And so I like started working for them. Hurricane, what's the big one that hit here? Sandy, right? Sandy. Yeah. Hurricane Sandy hit, or Irene, I can't remember which one. I think it was Sandy. Hit like 2 weeks into me working at Smack, and they were like, we need you full time because no one else can come in, because I was the only one who worked in the neighborhood. I could walk to work. Everyone else couldn't come in because all the trains were shut down. So I got hired full time, like super quick. And I've been at Smack ever since. So it's like not a clean trajectory. That's like, here's what you need to do to get, like, and it's like a series of silly events that let me be here.
That's incredible. But that's the thing. It's like, it's never a linear kind of trajectory to get from like one position to kind of where a creative is. Like, there's so many ducks and dives and bad jobs and misquoting and doing something because you just had to pay the rent and you hated it. Like, we've all kind of got stories that kind of builds that kind of stamina or endurance to go, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I know it's coming. I just have to get through this season to get me to that next point. Like, you don't see that, but you just hold on. And I'm sure that was like that for you doing those wedding invites. It's just holding on.
That's the problem, is at the time it was the best I'd ever been paid. So it was like really hard to, like, the idea of leaving that was scary. And it just really took a kick in the ass for me to just make another choice.
Yeah. And Craigslist to the rescue.
I know. I seriously can't believe it. I think Katie, who is the creative director at Smack, she said that may have been the last time they ever put an ad up on Craigslist. Cause after that we grew a lot more and we started like having much more like real avenues to get people. But yeah, that was like just saw a random ad. It was.
Do you still have the ad somewhere?
Oh my God, I wish I did. I'm sure I have the email correspondence.
Yeah.
It's also crazy because it was the only job I interviewed for when I was unemployed. Like, I saw it, I was like, that sounds cool. And I interviewed for it, and they were, well, I responded, and they were like, well, we have a availability tomorrow. Are you able to come in tomorrow? I was like, yeah. And then like I was the first person they interviewed, and they interviewed like a few more people. And then like, I think the next day they're like, come on in.
That's an incredible story. And to get in at a studio at that level when there's not that many people and to see it grow, that's an incredible opportunity, because you don't just learn design, you learn systems and you learn how to kind of scale. And obviously we're doing a lot more than just designing.
I mean, so much of my job, like obviously a large part is design, but so much of it too is thinking about the operation side and how that impacts our choices and vice versa. Like, you know, I'm always being like, wait, is this in the scope of work? Is this outside the scope? Do we have enough hours left? Like, I'm always trying to make sure that we're like operating within the reasonable means of like our agency, because we're small and like, you know, one misstep could really hurt us. So I feel like I've kind of learned that like growing up with the industry, or with the agency, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. You kind of feel like it's your baby as well, because you've seen it grow and you've had to tend to it and protect it. Do you feel like you've kind of got a really close knit relationship with Smack?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I spent almost my entire 20s back. So truly when you're growing up. But yeah, I feel like I am definitely kind of protective about the choices we make. And it's because I want to make sure, you know, we're doing things for the agency that work. We're doing things for the people who work at the agency. Like, I think something that's really important to me is making sure that no one who works at Smack feels like they're underappreciated or overworked, which I know is easy for it to happen, especially when we're working remotely. And, you know, you just don't see people getting overwhelmed because they're not right next to you and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's really important to me that it's like a good place to work in every respect, like in that it's working, like if the operations are actually working, and that people are happy to you know, be a part of Smack. And I feel like it's something that I'm always pushing for when we're making choices.
Yeah, amazing. You touched on the imposter syndrome just a little while ago. It is a huge thing for us, one as people, but as creators. How did you navigate, or how do you navigate that and deal with that, you know, on maybe a daily basis, weekly basis, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely still happens. And I think anyone who tells you that they've grown out of it is a liar, and they have it worse than everyone. but yeah, I think the thing that I always have to remind myself is, number one, you can't know everything.
Yeah.
So, and number two, everyone has their specialties. So, you know, I could be talking with someone who's the exact same position as me at another agency, and we could have a completely different skill set. And that doesn't mean they're better at it, and it doesn't mean I'm better at it. It just means we have different skills, maybe a different point of view. And I think, you know, it's easier said than done to believe that, but you just have to remind yourself, you know, there's sometimes we'll be collaborating with, you know, we collaborate with some freelancers sometimes, even though we usually try to work just with our in-house staff. But every once in a while, we take on more projects, and the project is too exciting to give up just because we don't have enough people to work on it. So we bring in some really talented people. And sometimes, like, I get worried that I'm going to, like, not live up to, like, how good they are. And I'm like, oh, God, they're so talented. Am I going to look like an idiot? And then I just got to remind myself, like, you know, they're freelancers coming into an agency. Like, they're probably really, like, overwhelmed by the fact that they're coming into this different company culture, mm-hmm. and like, learning a new way of doing things that, you know, because every agency does things a little bit differently. So, you know, you just got to continually remind yourself that everyone is a little freaked out all the time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the old fake it till you make it usually works too. But just don't be an asshole about it. Just don't be pompous. But yeah,
quickly, like, search something. Okay, cool. I know kind of the rough idea of how to do something, and then, you know, you move on. Yeah. Can you talk to us about your current role at Smack, and what does a typical day look like for you?
Yeah. So my current role is design director at Smack. So a long way from when I first started at Smack. But yeah, a typical day is kind of a combination between a lot of internal discussions, which I think if we weren't working remotely would happen a little bit differently, but that kind of becomes a lot of internal meetings. Then of course, client meetings. Mm-hmm. And then talking with our design team is a big part. So that means, you know, I've been involved in whatever project we're working on from the beginning, and maybe I'm passing it off to, you know, one of our more junior designers and, you know, helping them through, or maybe I'm giving feedback on a project. It can be really varied. You know, like I said, we're doing a lot of process shifting right now. So we've been doing a lot of internal meetings around that. But yeah, recently a lot of meetings. But yeah. Remote work, you can't escape them.
So talking about SMAC, you know, you as a studio position yourselves very differently. What do you do differently for creating brand identities? Because that's obviously a big thing that you do there at the studio.
Yeah, it's definitely one of our biggest things we do. And, you know, I it's hard for me to talk about it sometimes because I'm like, I just assume everyone does everything the same way we do it, because I've been in it for so long. But I would say the biggest thing we push for is being different and interesting. I think we never want to be like, oh, we're going to make your brand like Glossier, but for this, you know, like, oh, this is like the Casper mattresses, but for, you know, whatever beauty product. I, you know, we obviously reference what's going on in the world and in the market, but I think we really push ourselves to think outside of the current zeitgeist and maybe what's about to happen instead of what's currently happening and what we can kind of just riff off of. We really, like, I think the positive thing is, like, I love that we take on clients that are willing to take more risks, and that lets us take more risks with our visual identities. I feel like I'm very rarely like bored about like some like the looks I'm putting together. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, there's this crazy thing I keep seeing. I want to try that. You know, of course, justify it within the brand and make sure it makes sense for the brand. Don't just do it because you think it looks cool. But like, you know, whenever I'm excited about something, I'm always like thinking about it. And then if we're talking to you know, a new client, I'm like, oh my God, that thing I've been obsessing about will be perfect for them, you know? So I try it out and I see, you know, not every client, every client's idea of risk is different. You know, some people are very, very safe. Some people really let you go nuts. So of course you got to see where the client takes you there. But I think, you know, we really foster a lot of trust with our clients, which is really important for us to be able to do fun and interesting work. So I think our full process from strategy to, you know, creative execution is about building trust and about having our clients feel like they're collaborators with us, and that, you know, we're experts and we've helped them get to this point. So by the time we suggest something that we know is going to work for them, but they might be a little scared of, we've built so much trust that they're usually like, yeah, let's do it. Like, which is really exciting. I think like one of our brands we've worked with, I think is a really great example of that, is Busy Co. They are a wipe brand. Like they make wipes for your underarms, for your face, for your hands, for your full body. They have like these really big sheets. Does not, like, on paper, if you were sold that client, you'd be like, oh, this project may not be that interesting. But they are, you know, they're just a small team of people who really trusted us and were really excited about the ideas that we brought to them. And they let us create such a fun visual identity for them that I was so excited about. It's all this like playful type moments. Like, so I wasn't ever like illustrating something. I instead was like creating like an idea with some type and line work. And so I got to create these like really fun compositions for, you know, a body wipe. And like, I think it's definitely like, it's something that makes me really happy that I can do those fun things. And I think it really comes down to our process, like, and how we foster that trust with our clients.
Yeah, it sounds like trust is a huge thing from the very early beginning. And it sounds like you as a studio invest in the project just as much as the client is investing in you. It's very much a two-way street that you kind of come together for a project and you care about it just as much as they do. And I think that is a really important thing. And that kind of builds trust that they know that you care about their baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is crucial because, you know, they're putting a lot of trust. Our clients put a lot of trust in designers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes that's easy to forget that this is their livelihood that we have been put in charge of.
Yeah. And that's like another, I think it's a little bit about also how we choose clients to work with is that we're generally choosing people who are excited about what they're creating. They're not just, you know, someone like a 50 levels down from the person who makes the big decisions who just is doing this because it's their job. Like it's something they're usually very passionate about. Mm-hmm. And that makes it easy to get excited with them, you know. And we haven't mentioned this, but at SMAC, like we really try to work with brands who are trying to do something good. You know, depending on what stage they're in, sometimes they're just like, we know we want to do good. How do we do it? Or they have a really clear idea of how they want to do good. But I think that just kind of automatically makes your client a little bit more enthusiastic about their work that they're doing. And it makes us more enthusiastic because we know that they're genuinely trying to help the world in some respect, whether it's making sure their process is super sustainable or they have some sort of give back. Like it's nice to work with companies who are doing that work, not because they know they need to, but because they really want to do it.
Makes me
get excited.
yeah, exactly. Because I know on your site, you do talk a lot about sustainable design and working with people who are wanting to do good for humanity, but then you also do good for the planet. And I think that is something that is coming through in the design industry a lot more these days. You know, we see companies, what's their website? I think they're just called Goods, and they are based, I can't remember off the top of my head, but all of their packaging and their designs are all based around that sustainable design, sustainable, you know, companies and design and products. It is really remarkable that design is heading that way, that we can actually design for good. And obviously that's a very, very important thing for you and your studio.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, we kind of made, this was again, a decision we made as a group. You know, we kind of came together a couple of years ago and decided together what our values were as an agency and what we were going to focus on. And we're like, okay, we don't want to take on clients that feel evil. You know, we don't want to take on clients who we feel like working for them is contributing negatively to the world. And I think at the time, like, it feels super obvious now, but I think at the time when we made that decision, which at this point was maybe 3-4 years ago, not a lot of people were doing that. And now I think it's just become the baseline. Like you have to try to not be evil. Was that the Google phrase? It's not quite that, but basically, you know, being sustainable or trying to achieve sustainability, trying to be ethical, clean, whatever, it's now what people expect from brands and agencies. So I think it's literally like the least you could do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's true that being sustainable or being conscious of the environment for a brand isn't cheap. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard for brands that are just starting out to make that promise to themselves. And that's kind of where we come in, is we know it's a large undertaking and we are there to kind of help and focus that energy. Like, hey, we know you're small. We know you only have a certain amount of money to dedicate to this. Let's focus on here. But the kind of like the tenet of your brand, one of the tenets of your brand is that you're always going to be working to be better. So you're like, hey, we're starting here, but our goal is here. Because like it kind of, no one's perfect. No one does everything 100% ethically correct. And I'm talking about on the human level, not just company level.
Yeah.
And kind of our goal as people and our goal as any sort of brand or agency should be always to try to be better. So as long as you're trying, I think you're doing something right.
Yeah. Do you feel like that has been a major change within business, but then within your role as creating brand identities, do you think that that has been a major factor to how things have evolved, and where do you see the future going when it comes to brand identities?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely changed how we talk to clients and how we plan with them, because, you know, sometimes a client will come in with some big idea about maybe their packaging or something like that. That's, you know, that's often where, you know, sustainability can become an issue, because the more sustainable the packaging components, oftentimes the higher the price point. But a lot of times a brand might come in with just the idea that they want their packaging to be exciting, and that's it. And we say, okay, but let's make sure we're making choices that aren't extra. You know, they don't add extra material. They don't add material that's non-recyclable. They don't add material that's hard to recycle, but technically recyclable, but no one recycles it. You know, so it definitely has like some different conversations that we weren't having, you know, maybe 5 years ago with clients. You know, at this point, some of our clients were getting really specific. Like, we've hunted down this completely like sustainable ink you can use. And like, we're getting like really creative with what we can do. And I think it's also like how we talk with the client is we make sure it doesn't feel like this enormous task that they have to undertake. Like, we really stress that, you know, hey, if you come to us and you say you want to be sustainable or, you know, ethically, you know, conscious, you want to be socially conscious, we want to make sure that they stay true to that. And we want to find them the easiest way for them to be able to say that about their brand that doesn't feel like it's going to be a really long process. So definitely takes, you know, now it doesn't take as much work to get there. But I think in the beginning, it took a little bit more work to coach clients in those directions.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably something that you've gotten better at doing as you've had more and more of those conversations, and more options up your sleeve about where you can source things from and processes. That's always a handy thing to have up your sleeve when you're talking to a client about sustainable design and manufacturing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, every time we do a project, we learn something new. It's like it's an ever quickly evolving area, especially in the world of packaging. So, you know, we talked to one manufacturer like a year ago about a specific kind of recycling material we wanted. And they were just like, sorry, that just doesn't exist. And now it's everywhere, you know, like it's like the idea is there, but no one's been able to figure out how to make it affordable. And then, you know, in the last year, someone's figured it out. So, It's really cool because every client we talk to, we just add more more information that we know about the process, and we're never going to stop learning. We're never going to know everything. But definitely it's so helpful to have these conversations with the client too, because otherwise we wouldn't be building this knowledge base.
Yeah, definitely. So when it comes to presenting and pitching to clients, what are maybe some of those skills that you've kind of really grown in and learnt to kind of help communicate, you know, the big concept or the idea to a client that's isn't within the design world?
Yes, this is something that I think is an ever-growing skill. It's something that I actually really enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. The kind of how do you explain design to people who don't know anything about design? It's definitely difficult. I think number one, having an enormous amount of research and strategy before you get into any sort of visual creative already makes it easy. Easier, sometimes not easy. But because you can point to your creative choices directly to a very solid idea instead of just like, this is cool and would be fun in the industry. Like, you know, so it'd be like, you know, here are the tenets of our brand. We know we want to say this. We know we're speaking to this audience. So we've made this creative choice. So lots and lots of strategy, making sure the client is 100% on board with the strategy and the creative brief before we get into any sort of like original creative. Mm-hmm. And that goes to messaging as well. But then when it comes to how do we explain the design process to them, I would say the most important skill is definitely patience, which sounds a little cliche, but it's definitely the truth. I think that and the ability to, you know, by the time we're getting into the full creative process, we've already had several meetings with the client. And so you begin to understand what's important to them, their perspectives, where, you know, where they're coming from, where they want to go. So you kind of learn how to speak to them to get them to understand where you're coming from. So like, you know, if I know, you know, a client gets really focused on small details, like it's something that's been happening through the entire process, I make sure right off the top to kind of like make it really clear, like what details they should be paying attention to. Be like, hey, these are the things that we're talking about today. But if you see something else that you don't like, or you have a question about that isn't relative to the things we told you to pay attention to, definitely bring it up. We always love to hear it, but know that that will be resolved later in the process. Like kind of trying to stop the things from going off the rails before they it even happens. And I think it's definitely an acquired skill. It takes a lot of client meetings to get there for sure.
Yeah. And it's something that as a designer, we are constantly doing, presenting and pitching to clients. And sometimes, you know, some people don't enjoy it. Some people thrive in that situation. And it's, you know, if you don't like it, it is something that you need to learn to get better at. And it may not be your number one love, but it is something that is necessary as a creative to be able to communicate and pitch ideas.
Yeah, I would say that's one of the most important skills to develop, is the ability to talk about your work. Because from interviewing to talking to clients, like if you can't talk about your work in a way that is understandable to someone who maybe is completely outside of the process, then it's unfortunately can be easy to kind of dead end when you're rising in your career. Because if you know, you can be a really, really talented designer, but if people can't trust you to present your work to the client, then you're going to probably hit a wall at some point, unfortunately. And yeah, it's not everyone likes to do it. And I think there's a lot of, you know, we have one person I work with when she, our CMO, when she presents work, she has her presentation and she has speaker notes of exactly what she's going to say. And she says it in a way that you don't know she's reading speaker notes. I go into a meeting, I have no notes, and I just talk. Like everyone has their different way of doing it. And I think you've got to find your way of doing it, but you got to get there for sure.
Yeah, you got to try lots of different things. I think when I have to present to my bosses, like I'll audio record me talking through my presentation and I'll listen back to it to see where I may have kind of stumbled or where something wasn't clear, to then go back and refine it again and record it again and again and again till I'm at the point that I don't necessarily need the notes. I've kind of built that confidence internally. So if I go in with confidence, knowing what I'm talking about, I'm going to present in a way that gets an idea across and something that I believe in. And that is just something that I've learned, you know, throughout the years of having to do that to creative directors and art directors and, you know, scary people.
Yeah. It's, you know, it takes a lot and practice is literally the only way you can get there. And you know, I've suggested to people like, hey, like bug your friends, like ask your friends if you can give a presentation to them, because if you know what you're talking about, it makes it so much easier if you know, it's something that you've not necessarily planned, but you just have the knowledge of. And that way, you know, if you are presenting to a client and they do get lost, which happens to me. I'm not perfect. Every time I'm presenting a client, maybe I gloss over something that seems obvious to me, but not to them. But when they ask me a question about it, I don't feel blindsided or stumped. I can just break it down a little bit further and explain it because I have full knowledge of what I'm presenting. Yeah.
Which is great to go in knowing the ins and outs of those things to be able to kind of accommodate them and have patience, as you were talking about before, with those people, no matter who they are. Again, they're human as well. So
absolutely.
What is one of the most recent skills that you have learned as a creative?
Oh, that's a good one. I think it kind of goes to our process, that I'm learning every day a little bit more and more of how to kind of rework my own work. Like kind of the skill of letting go a little bit. And then also, like I said, we hired two new people for the new year, one of them being a designer. And so kind of learning how to speak to our new designer, because she's a new person with new ideas and new thoughts. So it's kind of like, I think learning how to communicate, learning how to communicate remotely has been a special skill I'm still learning. But I think those are the big ones for me because of, I've transitioned to the design director position over the course of the last year, kind of taking me a little bit out of the driver's seat when it comes to actually being in the programs, doing all the design work, and kind of learning to, let go a little bit and let other people work. And maybe they didn't execute the exact idea I had in my head, but it's still a good idea. I think that is, it's a hard skill to learn. But I think, that's the thing I'm really focusing on right now, is like letting other creatives have their space to be creative and to bring interesting ideas to the table and going with it. Even if, the little perfect crystal of an idea in my head doesn't come to light, because that's fine, because maybe it wouldn't have worked anyways.
And giving them the ability, like, I think that's a great thing for you to be able to give them the floor and go do what you do, and giving them the creative freedom creative freedom to go and do that thing and follow something without the worrying thing of, is she gonna like it? Is he gonna like it? Are they gonna like it? It's like, go. Let's see what you come back with. Like, do your thing. You've got skills and some ideas, and let's see what happens. Let's see what magic appears.
I think that's one of my favorite things, or favorite ways to work, is like when you're working with talented people, and you just let them do it. Like, I love when we're doing a photo shoot, which obviously not doing a ton recently because of the global pandemic, but we're still doing some. But if I'm on set on a photo shoot, which has been a while, if I'm working with a talented team of people, like, it's just so great to just watch them do the work. And then, maybe every once in a while I'll chime in like, oh, maybe we could feature the product a little bit more, but otherwise, this looks amazing because you guys are so good at what you do. Like, I always get so excited for that moment.
Exactly. So you've spoken about bringing on new designers this year. How can a designer or a grad make a really lasting impression with a studio or a company when they aren't actively hiring?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, have a good interview is number one, which I think generally means come in with a really polished and edited portfolio. Really get rid of anything that you think is like, well, it's okay. Like, if you don't feel strongly about it, get rid of it. Because all we'll really remember is the portfolio, unfortunately, as a whole, and not just like, but this thing was good. So good portfolio, be able to talk really confidently about your work, because we'll remember that too. I think sometimes more than ever, were just like, oh, remember so-and-so? She was so good at talking about her work. Like she came in with such confidence. She was great. And then we'll, you know, so if you come in being able to talk about your work with a polished portfolio, number one, you already kind of leave a lasting impression. But I think one thing that's really good that I've seen some people doing is making yourself a little newsletter that you send out maybe every 3 or 4 months. Like you don't even have to send it out all the time, but just kind of a little reminder of like, hey, remember me? This is the work I'm doing. I just did this really cool project. And if you want to work with me again, or, you know, at all, here's my, you know, how to get in touch. You know, this is definitely something I think is a little bit more common for photographers. But I think it's definitely something I've seen illustrators do and other designers do. That's just like, hey, here's a really exciting project I worked on. You know, you'll already have our emails because we've communicated. So you just add us to your email list. And it doesn't have to be a crazy newsletter that's like, you know, you're trying to make yourself into some sort of, you know, internet personality or whatever. It's just like, hey, here's what I'm up to. You know, we interviewed this woman several years ago at this point. Her name's Jenna Gang. She does super cool photography and video and stuff. And we want to work with her, but we still haven't worked with her because we haven't found the right project. But she sends out these great newsletters. Every once in a while, just when I've forgotten about her, I'll get a newsletter. And she just sent one out like a couple days ago that was just her, you know, 2020 reel. And it was just like, I was like, damn, she's good. We got to work with her. Like, you know, it just, it works, mm-hmm. You know? It doesn't have to be a crazy reel either. It could just be one particular project, you know? I think that, for me, that works. Don't send them all the time because I think eventually people will just put you on a little list and get you out of there.
Yeah. Same list. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a really good idea of just sparking the conversation again, maybe, and not demanding, hey, please give me a job. It's like, hey, this is what I've been up to. Here's a recent project. It just sparks, I think, as you said, sparks that idea or that conversation or that thought again of like, oh, that's right. That person, you know, they would be ideal. Like, you just have to be the last person on someone's mind. You know, and with this photographer, it seems like that is the case. She's the last thing on your mind when you're thinking about who are we going to get to shoot that project.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, exactly. Now I'm in the back of my head every time we talk about a new project. I'm like, will she work for that? I got to get her on it.
Yeah. Which is a great way to approach things. What qualities do you look for in hiring a designer or an intern? What are some other qualities?
Yeah, you know, we definitely look for people who feel like they can work independently to some respect. So we don't want to feel like we have to hold someone's hand through every second of the process. You know, if we're hiring an intern, obviously we're going to want to teach them and like, you know, we're not going to just send them out and be like, okay, let's talk in a week and see if you've made a mess. You know, but I think coming in with, you know, talking about like, oh, I didn't, you know, we've had some people we've interviewed who, you know, they talk about how they're taking like online classes to learn a skill that they don't have, but want to have, you know, and they don't, it's not necessarily a strong skill they have yet, but it's not even the fact that it's that particular skill, but it's the fact that they are looking outside of themselves to better themselves. And I think that is that kind of independent quality that we're looking for, the ability to, you know, be curious. Also just the ability to manage yourself is really important and manage time. I know that that's a big one that always comes up, but time management is so important. But I would say the biggest one that happens when we interview people that kind of is often a disappointment when people can have great work and have gone to a great school and on paper they're perfect, but they can't justify any of their work. It's just like, I liked it, so I made it. I did it in Photoshop. I can use Photoshop, you know? And I think the Shillington School actually does a great job of instilling the idea of like justifying your decisions and having a full process you're thinking through. And we actually have usually the most successful interviews. from people who are fresh out of school from that, like the Shillington school, because of that. Because I guess my big piece of advice for people who are just starting out in the industry or about to start out is, before you have any interviews, think about what you're saying about each project and why it's important. And I think a big thing we're looking for is system building, because we're a branding agency. So if you made one cool poster, great. It shows maybe that you have like really good taste and you can use the right programs and you can like design a poster, but it doesn't show us that you can create a system of things that work together in a larger identity. And I think being able to show that system building is really the most important for us, particularly because we have branding and visual identity is so important. So when I say like, you know, editing your portfolio, I think that kind of comes down to editing your portfolio for who you're interviewing for. So if you're interviewing for a branding agency that does a lot of visual identity work, really maybe just send them over your visual identity work. Maybe you don't need to show them the little post, the poster you made, or like the single standalone business card that doesn't have anything to go with it. Like, we would rather see like three super strong, like blown out ideas than like 12 cool ideas that don't have a lot of substance to them, essentially. So that's what we're definitely looking for.
What advice would you give a driven design student about to enter the creative industry, and maybe what advice should they ignore?
I think number one is think about what you actually care about, because I think it's actually a good time right now to be a designer. I think designers are in high demand. So I think you can be a little bit choosy right now, even if you're fresh out of work, or sorry, out of school and looking for work. So if you're fresh out of school, I think really only apply to places that you would be happy to get into, because then you can kind of more confidently talk about why you would want that job. And it would get you to build up your portfolio in an industry or agency you actually care about. I don't know if this is necessarily advice, but the things I wouldn't recommend, I don't recommend going after an agency just because they have a big name in the industry. I think a lot of people get really caught up in the idea that I need to work for an agency with a name that people know, or it doesn't matter. And so many people I know who end up working at those big name industries are miserable because they're just a tiny little cog. And, you know, they're working on like just Papa John's ads. Like, that's it. No other client, you know, no shade on Papa John's, but, but you know, I think not focusing on reputation and focusing more on work is really where you're going to be happy. People ask me all the time, they're like, so are you going to like go to another bigger agency since you work at a small agency? And I'm like, hell no. Working at a small agency lets me do fun projects that I care about. And so I think like finding what's important to you, and that's not always important to other people. Like, that's what's important to me. So those are the decisions I made. Well, if what is important to you is that you want to, you know, own your own like mega agency someday, like maybe you do want to work at all those big agencies. So I think like, even if you don't have your 5-year plan in mind, I think having some sort of like at least short-term goal of like what you want to get out of this job. Because I think, especially in our current economy, there's so little pressure on the agencies and the companies for people to want to work there, you know, like to make them feel appealing, and so much pressure, I think, on the people looking for work to make sacrifices for, you know, their ethics or their pay or their happiness to just get work. And I think like, try not to compromise and figure out what you're willing to compromise on. I think would be that would be my biggest advice.
it is great. Like, everyone's journey is so different. Everyone wants something different from their experience entering the design industry, and it's not a linear direction of you get this and this, which equals the big paycheck. You know, not everyone wants that. So it's just finding what your lane is, essentially.
Yeah. And honestly, you might not know it right out the gate, but I guess like if you do end up at a place, if that makes you miserable, try not to stay there too long. Immediately start looking for something else. It's so easy to stay at a place that sucks, I know.
Yeah. The wedding invitations.
Yeah.
But it's part of your story now. You know what I mean? Yeah. You've got that experience and you can navigate a situation or help people navigate a situation that are maybe in what you were. So it's always handy to have, you know.
Yeah, learning, being able to learn what you care about is also just as important as learning a skill. So you're like, hey, I want to work at a job that I actually like to work at.
Yeah. 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 And people that you like and you want to hang out with. Absolutely. Yeah. Where can people find your work?
So really only two places. The SMAC website, which I would say most of our case studies I've had something to do with at this point, just because I've been at SMAC for so long. Definitely did not do them on my own with the whole SMAC team. But or my website, which is my full name, GabriellaSearles.com. But I don't use social media to promote anything for my work.
That's okay.
Yeah.
your work speaks for itself. You know, on your website and on SMAC's website. There's some beautiful, beautiful work up there. So yeah, we'll get people heading over to that. Gabriella, thank you so much for your time today and you know your advice that you're able to share with us. It's been an honor.
Thank you. It's been fun. I hope any of it's helpful.
it has. Thank you so much.
The Pathfinder podcast has been brought to you by Shillington, the original graphic design bootcamp. To learn more about the podcast and Shillington, click the link in the bio. Show your support by subscribing and rating us on your preferred podcast platform. Original music composed and performed by Menakshi. Thanks for listening.